So namaste. And welcome to Satsang this morning. This morning in the Satsang, I wanted to spend some time just exploring the nature of reality, which is really what we're here for. Every time we come to experience or understand deeper what we are, or both of those, we can begin to break through barriers and boundaries that seem to have held us back as to living as this authentic self that we are. So we're going to do a little guided self-inquiry today. And one of the things I love to do is to try to do it differently every time, because like many things on an authentic pathway, self-inquiry can be misunderstood. I certainly did misunderstand it myself. And the simplicity of it and the beauty of it, and quite often it's the reasons it's misunderstood. So I'd like to kind of ask everyone, no matter how many times you've done self-inquiry and done it with me, to just draw a line in the sand and pretend that you are absolutely new to Satsang. And if you are absolutely new to Satsang, then you are perhaps at the best advantage of all of us, because there'll be no assumptions about it. So we can start with a really open stance. Let's see what self-inquiry does for us, takes us, shows us, reveals to us today, right now. So self-inquiry is literally inquiry, looking, seeing, and not necessarily thinking about what is, what reality is, what I am, what you are, what everything is. And so we can ask any question that we want to ask to get our inquiry going. I'm going to use my favorite question that really worked for me: what am I actually? But you can use what is reality, who am I, whatever question feels, just to kind of get to know what you actually are in your deepest experience of yourself, where you can experience yourself in all ways. And so it doesn't really matter what the question is. It's more the willingness to see and to think and experience differently than perhaps you might have done before. So the question, what am I or who am I, in some ways is the simplest question of all, and maybe also the most difficult question of all. And when I ask the question, what am I really, actually, there are several ways to answer that question. And the one I want to point to today is the immediacy of all of this. So when you ask the question, what am I actually, immediately, anything that is present, we can take as an answer. So there is an immediacy here already of what is. So in simple terms, right now, wherever you're asking the question, there's your body, there's the furniture in the room that you're in, there is the space in the room, and really there may be thoughts inside your mind, there may be emotions in your body, sense of confusion, clarity. All of that is immediately present upon asking this question. What am I really? All of this, this that is. And what we really experience when we ask that question is the isness, the what is of all of this. We've been conditioned to really receive answers to questions in terms of thoughts only, in terms of experience only. But there is a space in which the room you're sitting in, your body, your thoughts, the question even, what am I really, is appearing right now. It is here. It's invisible and intangible, but it is the space in which all of these shapes that you're taking, all these shapes are appearing. So from this computer I'm using, this technology, this body, and the same body who's, every body who asks the question will experience a certain amount of phenomena. Coming and going answers to that question based on where their body is right now. And that will be different for each one of us. But those shapes are appearing inside this that is. Your body, your thoughts, your emotions, any answer you get to that question are just phenomenal answers to that question. Phenomenal meaning having a start and an end, a duration, a shape that you can perceive. So I can perceive the shapes in the room I'm sitting in, the furniture, my body. And I can also perceive the subtle shapes of forms, thoughts and emotions and experiences still being perceived just in a subtle way. And then there is this perceiving space, intelligent space of being that is vast and unending. We just take the isness of the space. How far does that reach? And how far, where does it stop? Does it really stop in the room that you're sitting in? Or is the room sitting inside the space of your being, including your body and including a question and including all the answers? Immediately, there is this that is and all the shapes it's taking. Self-inquiry can be as simple as that. And maybe when I begin to try to think about an answer to this question, what am I? It gets very, very complicated. I can have lots of thought answers to that question. I don't know what I am. I do know what I am. I'm not sure what I am. I'm not sure if I'm doing this right. I'm confused. I suddenly had an aha moment, an epiphany, all of that. Now, all of that is included in the what is, isn't it? Whatever's happening inside this body, whatever's happening outside the body, and the space it's all arising in. It's just what is. And the what is of this moment, they're the same really, this moment and what is the same. And this is the only answer to this question that's here all the time. And if we notice, it was here before we even asked the question. Doesn't make it better or the right answer. It just makes it a permanent answer, that which is not changing, coming or going. So we're experiencing in this moment all the ways we can experience ourselves. We can experience ourselves as a body, as thoughts, as confusion or clarity, as fear or resistance or love or joy or peace. As thoughts, as experiences happening to this body. We can experience ourselves as the space that's also here. We can notice it's here. And when we look for a separate being in the space, we can't find one. Let's just search right now. When I look for myself in the space of being, this great space in which all of this universe is arising, a space which has no edges, something intangible cannot have an edge. When I look to try to find myself in that space, is there a separate me in that space? I can't find anything with any edges. I can't find anything. I find something with no edges. And of course, there's a body, there may be thoughts, different states happening in that body. But is there a separate being, this legendary me that I thought myself to be, with its problems and challenges and all of that? And we ask, what am I really? What is reality? Immediately, all of this is here, even before the question. All of these shapes are coming and going, changing constantly, aren't they? The thoughts, the shapes inside are constantly in motion. Different thoughts, different feelings, different sensations in the body. All of these outer forms are coming and going, some faster than others. Body will last for a certain amount of time and then it's gone. All of that is happening inside the space of your being. Now, it's okay that when you try to think about this, it will always seem like you're looking only through one body mind. It will always seem, while there are senses there to look through, that you're only looking through those senses. And we don't have to fight with that. We're just opening up to experience all the ways I can experience myself in this moment. Right now, you can experience your body, your thoughts, your emotions. You can experience the shapes that you're taking as the room you're sitting in. And you can experience yourself as the great awareness in which the room is appearing. The intelligence of your being is in that shapeless, formless, invisible, intangible you. All of these forms and shapes are sustained by you, created in you, as you, from you. Self-inquiry then can be a very quick thing when we open up to every possibility of what we can experience. And you can experience yourself as the great being that has no edges, that doesn't feel like anything, that is more of just a knowing of that it's here and that you are that. And that you're also this human body appearing in it and all other forms, but you can appreciate also you are this body too, and it's all that comes with that body, all of its experiences, desires, goals, dreams, memories, all of that. And we'll really only begin to suffer when we try to choose one way in particular to experience ourselves only. So if I recognize the great space of being that has no edges, no boundaries, goes on forever and is intelligent, and is the power behind every living thing, sentient or insentient. That's one way I can experience myself. If I say that's the only way, then I'm going to be in denial of the way I'm showing up also of this body-mind vehicle. If I only want to experience myself as this body-mind vehicle, I'm also going to deny the reality of the great expanse of my being. And who said it only has to be one or the other? Who said that? Where is it written? So can you enjoy looking through this body-mind vehicle, experiencing all that can be experienced while it's here, with the knowing that it's not only what you are, that it's only a small fraction of what you are, and yet is to be valued, to be loved and respected, just as all these other bodies, all these other forms that you're appearing as. Let's ask the question again, what really am I actually? What is reality? Even before we think about the answer to that question, this is right now, immediate. And it never not is. It never isn't. Words are funny sometimes. It can never not be. And it's always here. So we are swimming around in this that is our real nature all the time. Wherever your body could go, you could never get to the end of your being. Whether it's in the northern hemisphere or the southern, whether it's on a different planet, whether you could theoretically travel to the other side of the universe, there would still be that space in which your body is appearing, unbroken, continuous, unbreakable, indivisible, cannot divide something that has no shape. Only something that has a shape can be divided. So can you perhaps begin to accept that the answer has been right in front of us all the time? We can't see it when we're looking for something to happen, when we're looking for a happening. That I'm expecting some epiphany to realize this is what I am. And that will come afterwards. But this that is has always been, and it can never not be, and it's taking all these shapes to try to understand itself. Ever more complex shapes and forms, and finally it arrives as a human being. It takes the shape as a human being, still trying to understand and know itself. And for a long time, when it asks, "What am I?" the first thing it sees is a body, and it decides that is what you are, what it is. And eventually that becomes even unsatisfying, painful, and constricted. Because it wants to, this that is wants to experience itself in all the ways it can, consciously. It's coming to recognize right now, I am all of this, all of it, the intangible and the tangible. The more I use thought to try to answer that question, what am I really, the more separate I'll seem to everything. The more I directly look and see what's here, the more I will feel my oneness with everything. And neither of those are more correct. They are the same one. You are the vast, infinite space of being, pure intelligence behind the cosmos. You are that which can never come to an end. It has no beginning or endings. It's not limited at all. It's not imperfect ever. It cannot be absent from anywhere, all the time, present equally everywhere, appearing as all of these shapes. And you are also appearing as this human being that's hearing these words right now and speaking these words right now. It's just what is. Perhaps the answer to this question, this greatest question of all, what am I really? Can be immediately recognized just like that. The shapes that I take will continue to change infinitely. My shapeless, formless self has never changed. Like a kaleidoscope, if you had a kaleidoscope as a child, you could put it up and look through it and turn it. Every time you turned it, the shapes would change. There'd be a different combination of shapes. And yet the one looking at the shapes is always the same, always. And you've created all of this so that you can experience yourself in an infinite number of ways, and then finally come to recognize your no-shape self. which includes the appearance of you as a human being. All of it. You get to have all of it. You get to fall back in love with your human existence again, when it's a part of what is. When it's not all that you are, you can enjoy it without fearing its ending. There will never be a time when the space disappears, the space of your being. Even if it is absent of forms and shapes, it will still be here. The pure intelligence, the pure seeing, that which is looking through your eyes right now is it. You're holding up this body, this human body, looking through it like a pair of binoculars or a telescope. Using the senses to look through, experience through, recognize your everywhereness through. So is this question very, very difficult? What am I really? Or is it completely simple and easy? What am I really? Try to think about that. It may seem extraordinarily difficult. Nothing wrong with thinking. All right, just look and see what is when I ask that question and I have an answer. There is never a time when you ask that question when you will not get that answer. It's always going to be here. And when that body disappears, you'll take another shape to ask the same question for the joy of it, for the fun of it, to experience your infinite and unlimited nature. And also to enjoy your finite and limited nature. When they're finally not in contradiction with each other. I am this that is everywhere, all the time. And I am also this that's appearing somewhere, sometime, for a limited time. Just try that out for a moment where you don't have to decide, you don't have to choose, you don't have to prefer which one. Sometimes I'll feel like someone. Sometimes I'll feel like everyone. Sometimes I'll feel like nothing at all. What are you now then? What are you really? If you have been following along and if I've done my job right, you might have fallen in love with that question in a whole new way. What is reality? This. And the someone thinking about this. And eventually, when you embrace this question like this, even the and will drop away. Even the sense of limited and unlimited will kind of merge into one. I can look as the awareness, or I can look through my senses. And I seem to get two different types of answer, but they're not really, not actually. So I have, I will open it up for questions. I have two questions I want to get through that I didn't manage to, they've been emailed in, I didn't manage to get through on Thursday. Thursday satsang, so I will go through those now. But if you do want to ask or share your experience of the inquiry, if you have a question about awakening at all, then feel free to raise your hand. We'll see how many hands go up. So the first question emailed in. Says, Hi Helen, my name is John, and I live in the state of Michigan in the USA. I've followed a variety of paths to awakening since I first discovered meditation in 1976, but I've focused on Advaita Vedanta for the past 3 or so years. You showed up on my YouTube feed a couple of months ago. I went to your channel, and what I found there and subsequently in your books and in satsang has turbocharged my understanding of non-dual theory and practice. I'm so very grateful for your good work and want to begin here by saying thank you. Thank you very much. I have a problem about which I'd be grateful to have your thoughts. I've struggled with addiction to alcohol for my entire adult life. In several respects, it has done immense damage to myself and others. I have been in and out of treatment since 2003 with multiple long-term stays in Veterans Administration hospitals, two of which lasted over a year at the time. I've been involuntarily confined on psych wards about half a dozen times, all of them related to suicide attempts, ideation. In 11 of the past 17 years, I've been homeless, living in homeless shelters and group homes and treatment programs all over the United States. I haven't had a job for more than a year since 2003. And of course, I've tried and tried and tried and tried applying all kinds of therapeutic remedies, from AA to rational recovery to smart recovery, on and on, with no relief lasting more than a year or so. About a year ago, I settled into an apartment adjacent to Michigan's major VA mental health hospital. This is housing for homeless veterans receiving care at the hospital. Concurrently, I became age eligible to draw Social Security retirement. Soon after receiving my first check, I was drunk, of course, but was visited by a buddy who gave me some cannabis to try as a substitute for alcohol. I found that worked, and worked quite well actually, so I put myself on the marijuana maintenance program, substituting cannabis for alcohol. I can't say that I've completely stayed away from booze. If I have $10 in my pocket, I am at risk to pick up a bottle. So I pretty much have to stay broke to stay clean. It's a funky strategy, but it's pretty much working in terms of staying independent and generally healthy. The past year and a half has been my very best since 2003. Prior to COVID showing up, I was a dependable volunteer on the hospital's hospice long-term care unit. I switched to a vegetarian diet, bought a used bike, and ride all the time in gorgeous countryside, and have lost about 65 pounds and feel physically stronger and more vital than I have since my mid-40s. So I'm no longer circling the drain, but I'm actually accomplishing stuff. And kind of having a life. It seems that cannabis doesn't disable me the way alcohol always does. Of course, replacing one mind-altering substance with another doesn't make me free of addiction. In terms of awakening, I wonder what you think of addiction in general, and if you have advice for one like me who seems so utterly powerless over a toxic substance. I'm sure that any thoughts you have to share would be invaluable to me and perhaps others. See you in satsang. Namaste, John. So very honest sharing there, which I appreciate, and can't be easy to do. But you've already said in your message that things are beginning to change for you in a positive way, and this is the best year you've had so far, and that's very, very good. In terms of your question about addiction, I think that we are all addicted in various ways. All of us as human beings are addicted to thinking, addicted to thoughts, and addicted to experiencing those thoughts about ourselves. And we don't need to blame ourselves for that, because it's the only option we have. We're only taught at first how to experience ourselves through thoughts. And it's a very long time in earthly years before we can do what we just did and experience what we are. So everyone is addicted. I think the real the difference only is what we are addicted to, in terms of, you know, for my own journey, there was a time when I was dangerously close to alcohol addiction, and I've also been addicted to food, to spending money, all kinds of things. Still addicted to caffeine. That one hasn't disappeared yet. And I'm quite happy with that, by the way. And the last and greatest addiction, which is the addiction to thoughts. I think addiction is commonplace as a coping mechanism in human society. And it was only when I discovered meditation that I began to be able to switch my addiction to healthier and healthier things. So it could have gone very, very similar way to what you've described. I actually became addicted to the bliss that I was experiencing during a certain form of meditation I was doing at the time, which became its own limiting thing. So if we can see addiction as a coping mechanism, which I'm sure you've done a lot of work in and with yourself, in the programs that you've done, and that while we believe our thoughts and have no choice to believe our thoughts, we are at the mercy of any particular frequencies that run through our mind, and we don't have any choice on those. So if those frequencies are self-hating, self-judgmental, based on thinking that we're unsafe as a separate being, if I feel I'm a separate being, I'm going to feel very, very unsafe. That's commonplace throughout all of humanity. And we all do whatever we do to try to avoid looking at that. That's why we end up in satsang eventually, to look at that, isn't it? Whatever we do to cope with those feelings and suppress those feelings, because as a separate being, I have no way to prove to myself that I am safe. And I will experience endings and beginnings. I will seem to die when the body dies. And I will seem to be born when the body's born. And over it goes. So if we can look at addiction as a symptom of some greater misunderstanding, and that the addiction generally becomes less and less self-destructive as we continue in the pathway, and certainly was the case from alcohol to food to meditation to satsang itself. That was, you know, the great addiction we all have. And it's quite a healthy thing to be addicted to, in a way, isn't it? And if we can be gentle with ourselves, that however we're coping right now is however we're coping, and that everyone is trying to avoid and block out, suppress and move away from the pain of feeling we are going to come to an end, and the pain of feeling that we are unworthy of existence itself, which is utterly untrue, both of them, but they seem utterly true for such a long time that we come into this particular lifetime to see they're untrue completely. We can be gentle with ourselves, with whatever is going on in our life, to try to cope. And yes, that may not be the healthiest expression, the healthiest way. It may be a way that's damaging to others around us and ourselves. But if we can look at it as a symptom of a greater issue, and that when we address the main issue, which is what we're here to do in satsang, that I'm not going to come to an end. And that this loving being that is me, the what isness, allows any shape to appear inside it. And every shape to appear, that I am so free to create these shapes, that I can even can create this shape of a thought that says I am this separate being, to see what it's like and enjoy that for as long as I want to. And then when eventually it becomes too painful, I will begin to move beyond it. That this loving field of infinite awareness has never, ever, and cannot see you as unworthy, or there is no qualification needed for you to be accepted and loved by this. And as we come to really recognize what we are, that it's only in our thoughts about ourselves that we're unworthy. In no other place in the universe ever is that true. And we only feel unworthy because we've been trying so hard to feel safe as a separate being and failing, because it's impossible to feel safe as a separate being. And then we fail and we fail and we fail to get manifestation, to look how we want it to look, to control it, to feel how we want it to be, so that we feel safe. And even if we manage that for a second, it changes immediately afterwards. That because we fail over and over again to feel safe, we begin to blame ourselves. We begin to turn that anger upon ourselves, and it becomes self-loathing, unworthiness, hatred, self-hatred. It sometimes it turns outwards on others, but it always turns inwards on ourselves, always, always. So whatever's happened along the journey to discovering that you are not going to end, we can see as a symptom of this belief. And not the, of course, we need to take care of ourselves and our body and do what we can to work through addiction. I'm not saying otherwise, but it began to be, began to really shift quickly in my own awakening, when I began to realize we're all addicted to something. And the greatest addiction is thoughts. And that human beings use various substances as painkillers. And I've even used self-inquiry as a painkiller. And we all do. And it's fine and it's good and it's healthy to do that, that we experience less suffering when we self-inquire. We'll use anything and everything. And it's a symptom of the main lack of self-knowledge. Knowledge that I am this, that is, that's never going to end. And all my imaginary wanderings were just imaginary. And when they come to an end, I'll see that I've never been unworthy, that that's not possible for me even. It just seemed that way when I thought it was a separate being, and it seemed extraordinarily real. Such is the nature of illusion that it seems real, and it will always seem real. You can just come to clearly know it's not true. So it's I hope that gives you something to work with there, that anyone who says they're not addicted is not really telling the truth. We're all addicted to our thoughts, first of all, aren't we? And every other addiction that comes out of that, from my perspective, is a symptom of trying to deal with the pain of believing these thoughts, and the trying to deal with the pain of feeling separate and alone and small and scared and unworthy and disempowered and all of that as a human being. So could say more about that, but hopefully it gives you a sense of it. The last one says, "Hello, Helen. It seems many of us seekers have health problems. I know I do. The fear associated with it, about wanting to get better and not wanting to die, really obsesses my mind. I'm longing to surrender this fear. I meditate daily and have taken long silent retreats in the Thai forest Buddhist tradition. These retreats were often riddled with fear until the last week or so. I love Buddhism and the tradition, and I am still searching. The person, or me, has complex PTSD, and sleep has become so hard to find. I'm wondering if you would consider giving a talk directed towards awakening and issues with health. Many blessings." So any issues with our body, any health issues with our body, and quite often they seem to get worse, don't they, upon awakening. First and foremost reason to have a human body is to begin to experience yourself. And your body is always giving you up to date, up to the minute, real-time feedback on what you're believing to be true compared with what you've seen to be true. This is why sometimes illnesses get worse when we begin to wake up, because we're holding on to some belief still in some area of our life from being a separate being. And that is more and more out of alignment with what we've seen ourselves to be, what we know ourselves to be. So I might see today, like today, that I don't really have any edges, that there's an aspect to me that goes on forever, that never started and never will end. And when I come to a particular relationship I'm having, I may feel completely unworthy. And the reflection of that belief, the manifestation of that belief, may be some illness in the body. It could also be illness in our finances, in our relationships, in our career, in our awakening itself, all of the above. It can be slightly challenging when it's in the body, because your body is right in your face all the time, isn't it? It's everywhere you go. So if you can look at what your body is trying to tell you, what's the belief that's been mirrored by this dis-ease? Any illness and dis-ease in the body is always a reflection of some belief that's no longer true. And the more our body is shouting at us for attention, it's showing us how out of alignment what we're believing to be is. And you can ask, what am I believing that's reflecting as this issue? And Louise Hay has done some fantastic work on showing us the belief systems that are showing up in the body's conditions and illnesses. And there is no such thing as illness and disease on its own. It can only be a symptom of a belief that's not true for us anymore. That's why it gets worse the more we wake up, the more I've seen myself to be infinite and everywhere. The more I'm believing this thought, it's going to be more and more out of alignment, more and more against the fast-flowing energy moving through the body, more and more in discord, disharmony with the general flow of energy. And the general flow of energy through the body speeds up as we see ourselves clearer and clearer what we really are, including this human being. And this belief is like, that we're holding on to, is like standing in the middle of a fast-flowing river, or putting a giant boulder in this fast-flowing river, and the water is just smashing up against it. There's a lot of resistance. So just to ask, what am I believing here? What is this showing me? Of course we treat the illness, of course we look after the body. We can begin to see that that is a symptom of a belief. However you think and feel about your body's illness is the root belief right there telling, expressing itself. So if I'm scared of this thing and scared that I'm going to die, then that is, I'm not scared because of this illness or disease. I'm scared, full stop. And it's mirroring as this illness or disease in my body. Dis-ease is literally a lack of ease, a lack of harmony in the energy, which eventually manifests as a physical way. And yet it can be turned around if we can acknowledge the feeling that comes with it, the attitude, the way that I think and feel. And in this case, you mentioned fear. So I would really look at that, this feeling that I'm not safe. And really to, as much as you can, dive into the question, can I actually die? It's the last place our mind wants to go. It's the last place. But you're already feeling the fear of it anyway. It's not going to get any worse when you actually go and act and really look at this. I'm not for a second saying you're not doing that, but If you're going to be scared of dying, you might as well actually find out if you can while you're scared. And you might find something really amazing. And we know it consciously, of course we do, but the rest of our being needs to get this message, doesn't it? Some part of you is going to expire, like this body that's talking, and some part of you isn't going to. And if you begin to recognize that part of you that's always here, that's taking these shapes, different bodies, then this fear will begin to diminish more and more. Illness and disease is always a symptom of fear or unworthiness or anger. It's never the cause. It's a reflection of what we're believing. And it will shout louder and louder and louder until we're really sort of able to embrace what it's showing us. In this case, this deep-seated feeling that we all have as separate beings, that I'm not safe, that I'm in danger right now. Or I'm going to die, same thing. So I'm going to come to an end. That idea for me was so painful that I had to look at it. I had to find out. And I really would suggest you do too. And don't stop until that fear is absolutely gone. And that is reflecting in harmony and peace in the body too. So lovely. Okay, we'll go to Steve's question whenever you're ready, Steve.
Oh, can you hear me, love?
I can, yeah.
Yeah, cool. Self-inquiry, I enjoyed that. You were talking about the expansion of what I am. And I can see it. I can really see it at times. But it leads into the... I'm everything and everybody, right? There's two things. They're very similar, but it's two individual, should I say. From one person, I feel like I've been rejected. And the other person is... a bit of a control freak, let's say. And I feel like I need to do something about that. And that it's caused me a lot of trouble anyway, because it's really annoying me. I've been looking at it. I've tried going with the thought, just like you said, go under, just let it go, see what happens, you know what I mean? And I got into a bit of a mess with that. So eventually I came back to... When you said once to me, where do these people really exist? And they exist as thoughts in my mind. And I saw that pretty clearly, you know what I mean? And therefore, so it's what I'm thinking about them, or this or that, is what I'm going to see.
Yeah.
I'm projecting. I'm causing this.
You as the infinite being, not you as a personal self. We don't need to blame ourselves. You know, when I believe a thought, I'm going to experience it. But I don't have to make myself wrong about that, do I? You know, just wanted to put that in there.
It's okay. I don't think I'm... No, I don't think that will bother him.
Okay, good.
But I sort of clearly saw that. I could see I also didn't quite understand about being a mirror reflection. You also talk about things reflecting back to me. But I saw that for the first time, really saw it, where I was projecting it out there.
Mm-hmm.
But then I can't keep hold of that somehow, you know. And then I think about it, then it goes back into the, oh, she's still, you know, I still have to say something. I don't know what I'm going to have to do with this, you know. And I go back into that. And it's like a lot of fear comes up with it. And anxious about speak. Shall I speak to her? Shall I not speak to her? You know, it's like that. And...
So for a moment, you had a glimpse of seeing as your everywhereness. That everything is a projection from me, and I'll experience what I project. Yeah. And then you went back to seeing, experiencing as a someone being affected by other beings, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that, is there? There's nothing.
It causes pain.
Well, maybe what's causing you pain is this idea that you have this seeing, you should be able to instantaneously, immediately hold on to it completely.
There you go. Yeah.
Right? They'll have these glimpses, you'll have these flashes where sort of real knowledge starts to break through that actually what I think about this being might not be true at all. And maybe as the infinite being, when I believe this thought, I have to experience it.
So I got that, you know, that's sort of, I did get that. I've heard it a lot. I did see it.
And I can also be gentle with myself if I can't stay in that seeing immediately. The more gentle with myself I can be in that moment, the faster that seeing is going to come back. So for a little while, you'll be shifting between seeing as your everywhereness and seeing as your somewhereness, you know. And an awakened being couldn't really say which one of those is better. One of them feels nicer, a lot nicer. But if you can kind of just sort of step back from saying, I should be able to see from that place all the time. And yes, you want to. But the way to get to that is by, it's okay if I slip back into my old seeing. And it luckily now it hurts so much to do that. Immediately there's fear, contraction, all of that, that it's going to prompt me to just gently ask, is there another way to see this? I'd like to see what I saw before again. Not trying to recreate it, just inviting it to come back. There's a greater way to see this, not better, but greater, as in bigger way to see this. And I've seen it once before. I'd like to keep seeing it. And I'm okay with how I'm seeing it right now. It's not my preferred way. Can you see the softening around it?
Yeah, yeah.
And then in that softening, you accidentally slide back into that opening where it's just obvious. If you make any effort at all to get back to what you saw, it will seem further away because your trait is coming from the assumption that there's two ways to see it, and it seems like that.
Yeah.
So just a very gentle, oh, I liked that. I'd like to have that back, please. I'd like to see it deeper than that, actually. And I'd like for that to become constant and effortless. You know, very gentle intention and not judging yourself or blaming yourself, very importantly, when you seem to slip back into seeing other beings and feeling, you know, feeling like you're someone. It's never worked to push against what is. And if I feel like a someone right now that's being challenged by other beings, I can accept that. I don't have to like it and I don't have to judge myself either. And it's this unconscious idea, isn't it, that I should, now that I've seen it, I should be able to immediately hold on to it effortlessly. There's a force of habit behind seeing other beings as other and experiencing other beings through our thoughts about them, isn't there, that you're just starting to prefer not to do now. You're starting to prefer to see, actually, you know, there might be a completely different way to experience everything. And if you kind of have that gentle attitude, you know, it's, I've never managed to find where somebody's written it down that once you see something, you should be able to hold on to it immediately. If you find it, let me know and I'll tell you I'm wrong, but you know, it doesn't happen very often. So
No, it doesn't.
So does that help just to soften?
I'm thinking so. I'll watch this again when I've spoken.
Yeah. I did it myself. I have this big seeing. Oh, gosh, there's like, I'm kind of projecting everything. And of course you want that back. Of course you want to keep it. Of course it feels so nice. You want to see it again and again. But the very first thing we do usually then is to reject when we go back into the old way. make it wrong, make it bad, try to get rid of it. And that's never going to work. It's just kind of a gentle, open, I'd like to see what I saw again. I'd like to see it deeper. I'd like to know it with utter conviction. And I don't have to fight against how I feel right now. You feel better immediately just talking to yourself like that. You know, just being very gentle. Of course you're going to want it back. We all do. It's kind of like, wow, that's great, you know.
Yeah.
And you're feeling vulnerable and safe and everything. And of course we're all going to want that back when we experience it. But the more gentle you can be and more accepting of how you're seeing it in any moment, then the faster you'll accidentally slide back into. The moment you stop resisting what is, it'll open up again. And each time it shows itself, it'll be deeper, it'll be clearer, it'll be longer lasting, it'll have a more profound impact on the whole of your being, even when it's gone. And then eventually it just seemed to be kind of continuous and effortless. It's like, you know, if you wanted to go on a date with someone, you wouldn't go chasing them down the street, please go out with me, please go out with me, stop hammering on their door, you know. You kind of play a little bit hard to get, right, you know.
Some do.
Come if you like, you know. But let's not go there. Well, that's another conversation. You get the idea, though, yeah.
I do, yeah. No, I think it helps with the other one. So I think the other one, but I was trying to hold on to something, which yeah. I thought were good.
You can absolutely...
I'm a bit frightened of losing it, and I've lost it. I feel like I probably haven't, but that's yeah. what's happened.
The way to lose it is to chase after it. The way to get it back is to be...
I knew that one. Yeah, you know yeah. what I mean? But it must have been underlying.
Of course, there's going to be a strong desire to experience like that all the time. Of course there is. If you can kind of make peace with that, every single human being that tastes that undivided state is going to want it back immediately. And if you make peace with that desire, let it be there, but also don't fight with what is right now. You know, if you slip back into the other way, it's just force of habit for a little while. And the less you struggle in that moment, the faster it opens back up into that greater seeing. And you can do that just kind of, it's okay that I'm seeing it this other way again. It's okay that I want to go back to that. You know, it's okay. I haven't done anything wrong. First, when it shows itself, it'll reveal itself and then it will disappear again. And that's not anything I've done wrong. It's just there's a habit in place to begin thinking about other beings again. That's all it is, a habit.
Yeah, but I get lost in the dialogue again then, and I'm back in it again. It gets really painful.
Every now and again, when you remember, just every now and again, really softly, you know, when you get up to make a cup of tea or visit the loo or whatever you do, is there a different way to see this moment? Just like almost accidentally, just throw it out there and forget about it. You know, have a cup or watch some telly, and before you know it, there'll just be this greater seeing that opens up again. Lovely. Good question. Fantastic. Lovely. Okay, so there's no other questions there today, so we will leave it there. I think we've... gone through some good stuff. Okay. Lovely stuff. Thank you. Namaste.